From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Kat Warren is my guest. She's a university professor who loves to stroll the woods with her doggy looking for dead people. Her new book is called What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. Kat Warren, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's just a pleasure to talk with you, Gary.
You know, a few years ago, it was right after the Columbine shootings. I work at a middle school, and they decided that they were going to have a sniffing dog come for the protection of the kids at school. And I immediately objected, you know, because in my mind, I saw this snarling Nazi dog tearing at a chain, you know, and yeah, I thought it was terrible. And then this woman came, her name is Julia. She had this lovely little dog, and he was so cute. And the dog, whenever he smelled anything that he was supposed to smell, he sat down and wagged. He was all excited. I ended up loving this dog. I'm always the one that goes and greets her now when she comes. I'm all excited. The dog's here.
You know, it's funny because, of course, we train these dogs for all sorts of purposes. And sometimes the purposes can be things that we don't utterly agree with. So, and the dogs go, they love to go along for the ride. It's sort of like, what do you want me to sniff? I'll sniff it. I mean, I'm amused because right now in a couple of states with the legalization of marijuana, the canine officers are trying to and successfully untraining their dogs to find marijuana.
So
it's
other
legal
drugs,
now.
Other drugs, like, but not pot.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, and the dogs are responding. They're saying, hey, if you don't want me to find pot, if you're not going to reward me, then I won't find pot anymore.
So you're a college professor, but you have a dog. How did it all happen?
It happened because my husband and I got a puppy who was very bad at the beginning, and he kind of arrived in our house like a train coming through the front door, and I literally didn't know what to do with him. He was he turned out to be a great dog, and I know that a lot of stories start out, this pup was bad. He was a dog aggressive puppy because he didn't have anybody else in his litter to play with. He was a singleton, and it causes socialization problems. And so he had a lot of what trainers call drive, working dog trainers, but at the time I only translated as this is a dog doing things I don't want him to do. And the result was that I took him to a trainer who suggested that I actually work with him doing search work. So that's how I turned what felt like a pup that we might want to send back into a dog who became truly my best friend.
Well, dogs really like to work. They like to have a task. And
yes, I mean, you know, I think it depends on the dog, and I think, you know, I don't think that there's, you know, that every dog's destiny is to have a job. I think that there's lots of dogs that are perfectly happy hanging out at home and waiting for their owners to come back. But I think that there are other dogs where if they're hanging out at home, they're going to get in trouble if they don't have enough for their bodies and brains to do. And, you know, Solo was that kind of dog.
Well, how did you discover in Solo that, or the trainer, what was it about Solo that said search dog was the way to go with him, with rather than, say, obedience or agility or whatever?
Well, partly because, and I had dreamed of him being an obedience dog because my prior shepherd had been one, but it became really quickly clear to me that he was not a dog that was going to get along with other dogs. And for obedience or agility, and I think everybody's seen this, I mean, dogs are with other dogs for those situations. And Solo did not want to be with other dogs. He was happy with the humans. I mean, he loved me and my husband, but he would get in fights. So I did, when he was about 4 months old, take him to a trainer and literally said, what can I do with him? And it was she who suggested, why don't you train him as a cadaver dog? And I said,
you must have been delighted.
I have no idea what that is. And then she explained, and to me, the idea of going out for somebody who is missing and presumed dead, it felt okay. And Solo has a very good nose. As a pup, he had a very good nose, and I knew that, even though I knew very little about dogs that we now call sniffer dogs, right? I knew nothing about that category of dogs, but there was a hint of desperation when I went to her, and she, at the time, she thought she could comfort me by saying, just train him to do this. And later, of course, she explained that she never thought I would take her seriously. But that's what I trained him to do.
We're talking to a woman named Kat who wrote a book about dogs, and the book is called What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs, and the woman is called Kat Warren. So your book is called What the Dog Knows. How do you know what your dog knows exactly?
You know, Gary, I think what's fascinating is how much we don't know yet. And I think that what fascinated me about this project is that the book isn't just about Solo and cadaver dogs and my sort of training him and learning. I try to open it up and look at a variety of working dogs who use their noses, because that's who I'm training with, the police canines, and watching what they do. And so in the course of doing this, and I was a newspaper reporter for years, and then I teach science journalism, I started realizing that there was a lot of mythology out there about what we think dogs know, and a lot of exaggeration about what dogs know, and in a way, we're just getting to know truly how much dogs are capable of, and also starting to realize what their limits are. And I think that's as important for people to realize as their capacity, right? I think that we don't want to invent stories about dogs being magical, because that can lead to abuses too. When we depend too much on the infallibility of the dog's nose, and we forget that the dog is always working alongside a handler, right? And because people are fallible and dogs are co-evolved with us, inevitably dogs can be fallible too. As wonderful as their noses are and as great a tool as they are.
Well, you know, for a long, long time we've had Rin Tin Tin and Lassie and Benji, and dogs in fantasy are adventure stories that, you know, encourage us to believe that there are some miracle dogs.
And you know, I don't want to discourage people, because you know, I didn't grow up with Lassie because we didn't have a television when I was a kid. But the fact is that the mythology about dogs is really part of who and what we are, right? Our relationship between, you know, from Old Yeller to Lassie, I grew up on Albert Pearson Terhune's, you know, Lad, a Dog story. And I think it's great to admire dogs. I don't think it's wonderful to revere them, because I think at that point we make up stories that end up doing as much harm as good. And the fact is, dogs are great without having to make up stories about them. Their capacities are just astonishing. And I really don't need Solo to go find me in a well and
well, because you're not in a well. If you were in a well.
That's exactly right.
There wasn't
you know,
that
I, you, I, you know, I, the thing is that it does do an interesting disservice if we take the Disneyfication of dogs and then apply that to dogs in everyday life. And, you know, and when I see dogs do amazing things in everyday life and then people go, yeah, but look what Lassie can do.
Right. There was an episode where the guy had a injury and he says, Lassie, go get the doctor. And Lassie goes and gets the vet.
See, exactly.
Because that's the dog.
That's the kind of the misunderstandings that can happen, you know, if you don't have a perfect dog.
Well, there is a kind of an anthropomorphic thing that we do with our animals. And even looking at Solo on the cover of your book, What the Dog Knows, you know, he really looks like, oh, I'm posing for the dust jacket of Cat Warren's book about me.
Yeah, you know what he was posing for? He was posing for a red Kong toy that I was holding up just above the camera for the photographer. And Solo was so fixated on his toy that he was about to leap for it when the photographer got that shot. So, and look, he is. I mean, the fact is he's a happy, intelligent dog. And, he, you know, that we really respond to that. And they respond to us looking back at them with that kind of love. I'm not immune.
I was at the airport, and a sniffing little dog found an apple in my backpack, which caused them to then search all of my luggage and delay me for about an hour and a half. But nevertheless, it was a cute little kind of a beagle mixed dog that found my apple. So the dogs who are working dogs, they don't necessarily have to be purebred German Shepherd dog. It could be any kind of dog.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, all dogs have noses, and I've seen so many great mixed breed dogs doing work. And it's true that we do have this vision again of the purebred German Shepherd or the Belgian Malinois or Labradors as being the dogs that we most associate with this work. But, you know, the beagles that are used for a lot of the agriculture sniffing work that's done at airports, I mean, they are just happy working all day. And so all you need is a dog that likes the work and wants to please and wants to work for a reward. And most dogs that have all those things do just great. The military did studies early on with a variety of lap dogs because they were worried about hijackings that were happening. You may remember D.B. Cooper.
Sure.
Right, so they did experiments with sending women, well-dressed women, into airports with lap dogs on their arms, and the dog's job was to paw the woman's arm when it smelled gunpowder. And some of those lap dogs did just beautifully.
So there must have been, as you were working and training Solo to do this work, and then there must have been a time where you did the first thing, you know, and he actually went out and did his first job. What was that first encounter like?
That first encounter was hard, and I think that, and I only really write clearly about one case in the book because these cases are very often criminal cases, and so it was important for me to sort of not write about them. And you know, the first time we went out, we didn't find the person we were looking for, and as time went on, I learned that the person was never there, and that happens really often. But you know, he worked hard, he worked a long time, and we were clearing areas that were sort of a combination of woods and swamp. And I think that, you know, at the end of it, I thought, you know, he really is a good dog. We had been working together by then probably nearly 2 years, so he was a mature dog. And I think that it's always important to remember that it's not just the dog, it's the person. And your very first search, there is this moment where you think, am I really out here doing this, right? And then you get so focused on the dog that you go back to all your training and it's fine, right? You realize that you're working with people, for the most part, working with law enforcement, for me, has been a pleasure. You know, they're professionals. They're out there. They're trying to find whoever is missing. And in some cases, the people who are missing aren't that wonderful of people. I mean, sometimes you're out there looking for a drug dealer. Or, you know, somebody who has gotten in trouble because they're violent, they've broken the law, and they're missing because they've been killed by another criminal. And yet, part of the job is that it matters that they be found, right? And everything becomes a little bit equal. Right, you're looking for somebody who's gone.
Well, did you learn a little bit from Solo, because obviously he's not judgmental about it.
You know, for him it's a game, and for me it's really important to always remember that for him it's a game, and it needs to be sort of, the search needs to be the same. It needs to be fun for him, and I need to bring the same spirit of, we're going to go out and have a good time.
Oh boy, you found a dead guy. Good boy.
You know, that's absolutely right. He's, you know, for him, it's a smell that he's found. He has, you know, his notion of dead is that, oh my God, I get my tug toy.
And
it helps keep things in perspective.
And how does he know what he's smelling? How does he know not to smell a dead deer or a dead rabbit or whatever?
You know, it's a really interesting question, because scent is so complicated. And the fact is that human remains do smell different than animal remains, although there's some crossover. And so one of the things that trainers and handlers do is that you train the dog where you don't reward them when they find deer or cat or dog or anything else that they can find out of the woods very commonly. And so once you do that enough, the dog is going to say, you know, it's like the marijuana dog where it becomes legal, right? The dog will say, you never give me my tug toy when I find a deer bone. I'm going to ignore these. And human, sort of the range of human remains is such a complex scent that they still don't quite know all the things that make that unique. Scientists still haven't figured that out. The dog knows.
We're talking with Kat Warren, and her book is called What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. Well, what are some of the remarkable things that you've seen working dogs do?
Well, I was really fortunate in being able to research this book and just have this world open to me of some of the best trainers and handlers in the country. Pretty young dogs and young handlers learn how to negotiate really difficult urban environments and find people who were hidden in garbage cans or whatever else, and to get the dogs to track and, if necessary, immobilize somebody, right? Because that's what patrol dogs do.
How many, I just want to ask you some of the specifics about your dog. How many words does Solo know?
Solo knows a fair number of words, but, you know, for a cadaver dog being able to tell the dog, go out and find the thing I want you to find, he wouldn't even need to know a word. The fact is that he knows the moment I put his tug toys in my pocket, he knows what the game is. So he's fairly literate. He's probably got about 20 different toys in the house that he knows the names of.
And so, you know, the idea of turning him into a working dog was to help you and him find a way to live together. So how is he at home now?
You know, the fact is that he's great at home, and he's going on 10, so he's settled down enormously. And he was always, in a way, a great sort of human dog. He was just a terrible dog with dog. He just did not get along with the dogs. And so it's really true that, you know, we live in an urban area, and my sort of taking him for a walk in the neighborhood was always an iffy thing, right? Because I would kind of wave at people from a distance and say, no, we won't say hi now, if the other person had a dog, right? Because I could feel Solo tensing up on the end of my lead. And it's sort of like we didn't do that dog park thing with him.
I'm sure people appreciate that.
I'm sure they do. And, you know, we've been really lucky in that we haven't had a time where he has ever done anything other than kind of threaten to hurt a dog. And we have another pup now, and we had an Irish setter at home for years. And, you know, he's really awfully good these days, especially with females. He's a little tense at first, and then he'll relax. It really is sort of, it always just made him a little emotionally stunted with other dogs, but incredibly bonded with people. I mean, that was the upside of his being a singleton, is that he immediately just said, you're my people. Dogs aren't my people.
Well, do you now are you a working dog woman, and therefore your next pup will be a working dog also?
She is, and she is just busting my chops. You know, I thought when we got Solo, oh, wow. But with this pup that I just got, my husband and I just got back from West Virginia this past weekend, where we drove up so that I could work with her breeder, who's a wonderful trainer as well, because it's like the new pup is Solo plus in terms of some of her drives and some of her desire to work. So you always kind of get what you ask for, I think. I thought, hey, I can handle a working dog.
Well, now, how good is Solo? Do they have competitions? Is Solo the, you know, the fifth-ranked sniffing dog or whatever?
You know, there are no competitions. What I think is really interesting is that it's always such a combination of things that you've got the nose, and then you need to have a dog that is environmentally really sound. So a dog that can go on different surfaces, that can climb over and under and through things. You know, Solo is a pretty big dog, and it's not always as easy to get him into places that other dogs might be good at. So like a terrier searching under a house has a lot easier time than Solo. And so there have been cases where people ask me to search a crawl space, and we have to talk through what that means, right? Getting a dog who can literally crawl under those spaces and get in there, that can make a difference. So I always look at it and think, you know, Solo's got a very good nose, but as dogs get older, they can actually lose some of their ability to smell. And sometimes what you do is you think through about what their experience does, because Solo now is extraordinarily experienced at finding scent. And so some of that experience makes a difference, right? He kind of brings his knowledge to a scent problem. And that can actually not only compensate, but really replace if his nose is getting a little less good, right? So, you know, people have told me that he's got a good nose, and people have told me, trainers have told me that one of the things they like about him, he's very easy to read. You know, you have to be able to look at what a dog is doing to know when they're getting into a scent, right? And Solo's body language is very clear, and that makes it easy for somebody like me. Because there are dogs that can be very subtle, right, and they're getting into scent, and you're not seeing their tail or their stiffening or whatever they do. Solo has some pretty characteristic things he does. With some hunting dogs, you know, I've watched German short hair pointers, and, you know, when their tail goes up and it starts to wag, right, and you go, oh, look it. Mm-hmm, they're getting close to what they're looking for.
Yeah. Well, will you be able to use Solo to teach your puppy? Well, can one dog help another dog learn?
I think so. Scientists are just starting to see that mimicry is actually something that animals do, and it seems so natural to us to say, of course the mother teaches the baby to do these things, but one of the things that people are starting to learn about is that literally that just watching can make a difference. And so there's a couple little early studies that show that it's very possible that older dogs can teach younger dogs. The science isn't very clear on it, but certainly I've already had Solo and Coda working where she's watched him, and what she does pick up on is his excitement for the game, right? And so his yowling and leaping around when I bring out his tug toys makes her excited. And then she'll watch him, and that intensity will make her more intense. Is she mimicking him? I don't know, but she's clearly picking up on some of that.
The book is called What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. It's a fascinating book, and the author, my guest, Kat Warren, thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Gary.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time. Come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can find us on Facebook. I want to thank Kat Warren. Her book, What the Dog Knows, The Science and Wonder of Working Dogs. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.